Greg Shepherd is the entrepreneur's entrepreneur. He is founder and CEO of Startup Science. He is an author, a speaker, a consultant, a man of many varied interests. His newest book is The Startup Life Cycle. Back on the show. Welcome back, Greg.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me, man. You're a cool cat. I appreciate it.
Well, it's always great talking with you, but refresh our memory. Tell us a little about your personal lives, more about your work, and what motivated you to write the new book.
Yeah, I mean, so I am from a multi-ethnic family, foster adopted family. We grew up pretty poor. In fact, we lived in Oakland, California, which at the time in the 80s was like an active war zone. It was pretty, I got beat up a lot. And so my mom moved us to a piece of property and we homesteaded on the property without power, electricity, water, anything, and lived in tents for 2 years while we built our house.
Wow.
I started getting into the entrepreneurial concepts, selling Rubik's Cubes, rattlesnakes, livestock, like pretty much everything. Then I tried to join the Navy. That didn't work out. So I started, and I couldn't get jobs. So I started building companies. And so now you fast forward 35 years, I have built and sold 12 companies on my 13th. I've invested in a bunch of companies. So today, actually, deal closed was my 27th transaction. And then during this whole time frame, for a while after I was done at eBay, I was sold a couple companies at eBay, and I had golden handcuffs for a little while. And so when I left, I went into politics, became the chairman for congressional candidates, trying to get people of color and women into Congress and trying to help with the opportunity equality issue. So basically, in my life, I found that becoming a founder enabled me to have success. So I want other people to experience the same. But 90% of founders failed. So what I did is I said, okay, I'm going to do a research project to prove to the government that we can fix this issue and then have it so that the government puts more money into startups. And so that was the research I did. That's in the book. It was 5 years, a team of five people to figure out what is the major underlying issue that has to do with founder failure. And the first thing I had to do was explain the startup life cycle to the founder. So in this book, what I do is talk about, you know, the life cycle of founder, like what are the different stages they go through, why founders fail during those stages, and what they should consider in order to offset the chances of failure during those different stages of the life cycle. Sorry, I know that was a little long-winded.
No, that's awesome. And it wasn't free either, these five people that you were doing the research.
Yeah, $500,000 on it. It was a pretty substantial investment. But, you know, like, I really am passionate about trying to fix wealth inequality. So social and environmental impact is my passion. We all live on this little world together, and whether we like it or not, any destruction that anybody does in the world affects everybody. So my dream was, can I take people that are otherwise marginalized? They're hungry. They have the passion, and frankly, they don't have a lot to lose, right? And it's risky. Can I take these people and apply them to social and environmental impact issues? And the answer is yes. So I wrote the book on that and then put out the startupscience.io platform. It's free for founders to learn, right? So you can go in there, you can take classes, there's grants, there's all this stuff free for founders. And can I then help? And then can I prove it with the data that's in the platform and go back to the government and say, hey, listen, you know, we need to put more money into this because this is innovation. This is, you know, founders create the future, not corporates. Corporates buy the stuff that founders create, but founders are the ones that create the future. So I was like, okay, can I get the government to believe this, take a bigger risk by providing them with data that doesn't currently exist at all?
And you feel like you've done that?
I mean, I'm on my way, right? I mean, we have the platform's been active for about 4 months. We have over 100 universities, the Ivy League ones down to nonprofits. We have governments, we have specific nonprofits that specialize in like the Black Entrepreneurs Project or Startups for Africa or women, Hispanics, you know, across the board, LGBTQ plus, the whole deal, right? And we have thousands and thousands of founders in there right now taking classes and doing things. And in the book, actually, there's QR codes for each chapter that allows them to come into a specific chapter and read all of the stuff that I couldn't put in the book because you only have 250 pages. And I had like thousands of pages worth of stuff to do. So I think it's working so far. The data is just starting to come in. But, you know, soon enough, I'm thinking probably about 12 months from now, I'll be able to open the floodgates for founders by proving to Congress and the Senate and the people in the budgetary economic development departments, et cetera, that it is indeed an investment that has more payoffs than the risk, I guess.
So you get the opportunity, you have an audience with congressperson, a senator, and they say, you know what? This is why I believe that more investment should be available from the government to founders. Here are those points. What are they?
Yeah. So one of them is the reason why I did the platform, which is that the early stage. So what I'm focused on is pre-A round, right? So early stage. After A round, there's metrics, right? So there's money, there's capped LTV numbers, there's revenue growth, margin, retention numbers. So that's why all the investors focus on pre-A round, because there's data there and the risk is lower. So I focus on early stage. Well, in early stage, there's no data, right? So nobody can find anything because all of the people that have data are scraping the internet to get their data. And when it's on the internet, it means that the company is already to a certain place. The early stage ones that are, you know, like 47.1% of them fail within the first 18 months. And the rest of the failures going up to 90% happen over the following 5 years. But they happen for decisions they made in the first 18 months. So really what I need to do is focus on the first 18 months. In that first 18 months, the big thing, the number one reason why founders fail is because of bad decisions. So you have to ask why, and that's based on bad advice. And then you have to ask who, right? The bad advice is coming from investors, mentors, and program managers, and other founders, which is basically the same group of people that they're seeking help from. So then I started digging into why are they, because they're not doing it maliciously, right? They're trying to help them. So then why is this bad advice happening? And one of the reasons why the bad advice happens is because if you go online to learn something, you have to understand first whether the advice you're getting is good advice or bad advice, which requires some knowledge. So they're taking this advice from people. There's a lot of talking heads out there, right? So they're taking advice from people. And a lot of times these people have never done a startup in their life. They've failed. They've done one. I call them one hit heroes. And so you need somebody that actually has real experience doing this, right? So I was like, okay, what I'm going to do in the platform is I'm going to teach them the fundamentals, not what to do with their business, but what is this thing in the first place? And I'm going to do it in 8 minutes. And then I'm going to give them tools and grants and lists and resources and everything in the startup ecosystem in one place to prevent them from having to spend their whole life out there hunting for all these little details that they need to get a company for or paying for them, right? And therefore decreasing the level of startups that fail due to this advice subject matter, right? And so the second reason is I already addressed, which is the fragmentation of our industry. So if you look at early stage, you can see that the average startup assistance program will have like 12 to 15 different logins and software. The average founder has 25. So each one of these require money most of the time and logins. And that means that the data that it can help them with, you know, the AI that we have now is fragmented across the industry. So it's impossible, right? So with this platform, it means that all of the data is in one place. It means they have one login. It means that they don't have the same expense or no expense at all, depending on what type of user you are in the platform. And it allows ultimate flexibility for the program to, you know, customize it for themselves. And so therefore dealing with the second real big issue, which is the fragmentation of the industry, right? This big, big problem. The other reasons why they fail are usually attached to those two things. So one of them is overvaluation. And so we saw this big bubble happen, you know, right after COVID, right? We saw this big, you know, valuations cut in half, you know, all these big problems. So that happened because of bad advice, right? Where does that bad advice come from? That bad advice is directly tied to investors. Because investors, and I mean VCs, primarily VCs, micro VCs, anybody that isn't investing their own money, but the majority of the time is investing LPs' money, they may make 2 and 20 typically, so 2% of managed funds and 20% on what they earn over the hurdle, which is just how much they invested. So these guys are making money whether the investor make or lose money. But the size of their portfolio, the value of their portfolio is what gets them more investors. So overvaluation is actually good for them, right? And typically the 90% failure rate doesn't bother them because they have a spray and pray approach. So that handles that arena. The rest of the investors are usually, they're smart people and they invest. And they have advice that's based on looking from the outside in. Right. So they're not founders themselves. They're not practitioners. They haven't done it themselves. But it's like the analogy I use is like it's one thing to write a book on or watch a whole bunch of people ride bikes. It's a whole nother thing to ride a bike. Right. So they're giving advice from watching people ride bikes, not from having ridden one themselves. Does that make sense? So they unintentionally give people bad advice. Universities. So I co-founded the Fulbright Entrepreneurship Initiative, which is the concept is, and it's not just for university students. It's open to everybody. But the concept is to find big businesses and then give them money to help them get off the ground. Right. Part of this, I did a research project on university program programs. Right. So university entrepreneurship centers, innovation centers, that and that. Right. 1% of the ones I surveyed, 600 university programs, 1% of them had ever done a startup, ever even been involved in a startup ever before.
Wow.
Right? So you're talking about I'm talking about big universities, right? Not just little ones. And the same thing goes across all startup assistance programs. So you have a fraction of a percentage of the people that are in the programs actually having experience. So they use mentors to help them extend. Well, the mentors are oftentimes it's the same profile. They may be like somebody that was a co-founder in a business and they were like the head of revenue. So they're good for that one purpose, but they're not good for like financials or product or the other elements of a business, you know, service, support, etc. So, you know, they typically will put them with one mentor and that mentor usually will get over their skis and not say, hey, listen, this isn't me. You need somebody else for this. And so what I'm trying to do with the platform is do a better job giving them the right advice at the right time, right? So there are two things that make Google search so valuable, and that is time and need, right? So you need something now and you get the timing. It's the same thing with advice. You don't need the advice. You don't know when you need advice until you need it. But as soon as you need it now, right? And you need it from the right person. So time and need. So that's what I'm trying to do is solve these variable issues, but they all connect to the same stuff, right? So, you know, if you were to line out everything, you see all these problems in a graph and then you see them all pointing to the same like top items. Those are the things I address in the book, and those are the things I address with the platform.
Well, that's no small feat, man. So 5 years, give or take.
Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah. The 5 years of research, 4 years for the book, and 4 years for the platform. and almost $5 million to do it. And so it's really cool, man. It's like we have, it's really cool to see founders in there really solving serious problems. You know, some of the examples are a guy who an autistic guy like me, who built a company or came up with an invention, the ability to see the counterindications of medication with you specifically as so personalized medicine. So there's a lot of people that die because they'll take two different medications together. And in the documentation from the pharma companies, it's like, yeah, it's okay. But for your specific blood type or your specific body, it might kill you. So this guy has invented that, right? Another two women founders came up with a way to watch the emissions of greenhouse gases from livestock farms, because there's like holes in the ozone above livestock farms because of the methane. And so she captured a way to see where the methane is coming from, so they can do methane capture and then burn it for energy. So it's stuff like that, right? Like you, corporates aren't doing anything about that, right? They're just, so that's why I'm so passionate, man, you know, because these founders are people usually that are in the space, like they're working at the livestock space, right? And they're seeing this and they're like coming up with ideas. So it's like, you could tell I'm pretty pumped up about this.
For sure. It makes all sense in the world that people that are actually doing it know where the problems are and are actively looking for solutions. And if you can turn that into a company, it's incredible. I just finished listening to the new Elon Musk, Walter Isaacson biography. And I just thought it was extraordinary. I know you've got the picture of Steve Jobs behind you, and his biography was extraordinary too. What are your thoughts on Musk just as an entrepreneur?
You know, listen, the guy's autistic like me, so I love him. Okay. And yeah, he makes mistakes, but everybody makes mistakes. His are just public, right? And he says some stupid shit that he shouldn't say, right? I mean, like, you know, have you ever said something that you shouldn't say? Yeah. Have you ever engaged in something you have no business engaging into, like what he did with Twitter? Yeah. So he's making public mistakes, verbal public mistakes. He's making, you know, I think his stance on like, you know, social media should be free speech. I agree, except for hate speech. Like, you know, his whole comment about, that president being allowed to be in there and say whatever he wants. I said, yeah, fine, just not hate speech. You cannot instigate violence or hate against another human being or anything like that. Like, that's not public. You shouldn't be able to... You shouldn't be allowed to do that in a privately owned public forum, right? Like, I disagree with that. So I think he should have stayed out of Twitter. And I think it was a mistake, and we'll see how it plays out. But I mean, the guy came up with the Hyperloop. The guy came up with the Boring Company. The guy came up with, I mean, NASA couldn't even fix this rocket thing. And the guy's landing rockets on a floating barge. That's, you would get seasick on this thing. I mean, you know, you've seen the videos. And not to mention Tesla, right? I mean, the guy's amazing. I don't care who you are. The guy is absolute. And that was before PayPal. And before that, it was PayPal. I mean, the guy is like incredible. So anybody that trashes Elon Musk, I'm like, yeah, he deserves all that trash talking. But you need to also what he's done for us. We haven't seen electric cars on the road until he came out with Tesla. Now you see them everywhere. Right. We have never had a rocket that could re-land itself and reuse. So he's saving massive amounts of natural resources and allowing us to put satellites in the air, which allow us to have GPS and all of these things. You know, it gets getting better and better. You know, you don't have to love him to love what he's done. You know,
I think that's really well said. It's staggering the risks that he's taken and the challenges and problems that he's overcome on so many different endeavors. It's amazing. And it strikes me that you are going to give more people the opportunity to do that through this work. to take those risks. And
that's exactly what I'm doing. I have a painting of Elon Musk over here, Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, all of them, right? And I call them my board of directors. And these guys have changed the world. I want to enable more people to be Steve Jobs, more people to become Elon Musk, and so on and so forth. You know, and I know that most of them fall into the graveyard of, you know, 90% of them fall into the graveyard of founders that failed for reasons that 80%, almost 80% of them fail for the same reasons. All you got to do is fix those reasons, and then you're going to have an increase in success. No question. Like, logically, it has to happen, right? How much is the question? But will you see more of them coming out and being successful? Absolutely.
Love it. Well, Greg, thanks so much for coming back. More importantly, thank you so much for making the investments and doing all of your work. Where can people learn more about you? Where can they get their copy of the Startup Life Cycle? Give us all the places.
Sure. So my personal website is gregoryshepherd.com, and you can, like, all my 140 articles are in there. My TED Talk, everything I've done is in there. There's even scans of my brain from being autistic in there. All of my philanthropy and the Startup Life Cycle book is under author. It's in Amazon. You can listen to it in Audible. It's everywhere. You can buy pre-sales right now. Friday is when they start shipping books. It's called The Startup Life Cycle by Gregory Shepherd. And then for the platform on the startupscience.io website, just go to solutions, click on founders, and you get free access. So you can go in there and knock yourself out.
Incredible. If you enjoyed this much as I did, show Greg your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. And with any founders or would-be founders in your life, go to gregoryshepherd.com. Check out all things Greg. You can even look at his brain, which is amazing. Pick up your copy of The Startup Life Cycle wherever and however you like to consume books. And go to startupscience.io. Click on the founder section and get access to everything that Greg's been talking about today. Thanks again, Greg.
Thank you so much, George. Have a great weekend.
You too, brother. Until next time, remember, just like Greg's doing, do your part by doing your best.